out of the marketplace. There are people who have moral opposition to vaccines. There are parents who do not want to vaccinate their children against smallpox. You can imagine that those types of individuals could also then petition a judge that they select, that they know might have similar views, and petition that judge in order for those types of drugs to be removed from the marketplace as well. Now, years ago, that might have seemed to be something extreme and that would never happen in the United States. But we're in a critically unusual time where a case such as this has now reached the Supreme Court. And what that does mean is the potential for other kinds of petitioners to come forward who are against other prescription medications. And in some ways, when you look at the Burwell v. Hobby Lobby decision, there is an aspect of that that has already been visited by the Supreme Court.
I want to bring Julie Burkhart into this conversation. She is president of Wellspring Health Access and co-owner of Hope Clinic. She worked with Dr. George Tiller, as I said earlier, who was assassinated in church, well-known abortion provider in Wichita. Julie, just respond, if you could start off by talking about the state of abortion access in this country and your concerns about what the Supreme Court will rule and how it affects your practice and pregnant people all over the country.
Yes, thank you, and good morning. Well, we have seen with my work in both Illinois and in the state of Wyoming, which are two very different states, one where we have legal protections in Illinois and in Wyoming, where we have been in litigation and battling the state so that people can maintain their bodily autonomy. We see primarily in Illinois, we've had an uptick. We're seeing over 800 patients monthly now. Our patient volume continues to increase, has been increasing after the fall of Roe in June of 22. We see primarily our patients coming from states that have now banned abortion care. So Missouri, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, Mississippi, any of the states that you see surrounding that sea of blue, which is now Illinois. We also see that 50% to more than 50% of our patients, which is in line with the national numbers that we see for medication abortion, those patients who are coming to us are requesting to terminate a pregnancy via mifepristone and misoprostol.
Can you talk about the clinics that you run? Can you talk about what happened in Wyoming and where you are in Wichita, where George Tiller died?
Yes. I will start off with Wyoming. We were set to open our doors in June, actually June 14th of 22, just 10 days before the court ruled. However, in late May of last year, we had an anti-choice arsonist set our clinic on fire. And so we have spent these past months rebuilding the clinic, and we are hopeful that we'll be able to open our doors next week. It's been quite a trek. Law enforcement has apprehended the arsonist just a few weeks ago. Unfortunately, you know, it was a 22-year-old Casper, Wyoming woman, Lorna Green, who decided that abortion was disturbing to her, she stated in an affidavit, and decided to set our clinic ablaze. But we did not want to let that deter us. People in every part of this country deserve to have access to reproductive health care and to make their own decisions and determinations about their bodies. And so we decided that we would dig our heels in even further in Wyoming and make sure that people have access to abortion care.
I mean, my God, Julie Burkhart, you're a certified nurse practitioner. Your Wyoming clinic was bombed, was set fire to. The clinic in Wichita, well, George Tiller, the man you worked with for years, was murdered. What, explain your bravery, why you continue. This is extremely real to you, not to mention what happens to women who are under extreme duress and or pregnant people who say they need to have an abortion.
Well, sometimes I just don't know how to answer that question. I just have a very deep conviction and feel that if we are living in the United States, people deserve everywhere, and no matter who you are, deserve access to quality health care, amongst other things. And people must be able to make their own decisions about their own bodies. So it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, living in New York or California or Wyoming or Oklahoma or Kentucky, people everywhere must have the ability to make decisions about their own lives. Otherwise, I don't feel that what we stand for in the United States then really exemplifies that intent of having true freedom for everyone in this country.
Let me ask you something. The woman who was charged in Wyoming who set fire to your clinic, she wasn't charged with domestic terrorism?
Well, she is being, and the case is still in process. There is supposed to be a grand jury hearing, I've been told, next month. I have not heard back yet from prosecutors. She is going to be charged under FACE, and I'm not sure what the other charges are at this time. I do know that the penalty carries 5 to 25 years, I believe, in prison.
Also, mifepristone is part of a two-drug regimen. The second is misoprostol. Now, if mifepristone, if people can't get it, they can use the second drug. It's not quite as effective, and it has more side effects. Is that right? So people who are pregnant will be endangered by simply having the second drug, though if you can talk about that, what this ruling means.
Well, and this is where it's been such a, you know, we have just been in limbo. It's been a ping pong effect. You know, regimens regarding medication abortion were changed after Roe fell back in June because of people coming from banned states over to legal states and not wanting to put patients or physicians in a precarious situation going back to a banned state. So here we are in a different situation with medication abortion, where we're looking at potentially providing a misoprostol-only regimen for our patients. And it's concerning because we want to continue to ensure that patients, if they need abortion care and they're coming from banned states, if they can get to a clinic in a state where it's legal, that they are not going to go back to their home state and being prosecuted by overzealous, you know, attorneys in those states. So we have protocols in place that we will use if we need to, but it is definitely going to put a burden and a hardship on those patients. And we suspect that more people might opt for procedural abortions than medication abortions at that point, but we will see. And, you know, this also makes it harder, especially for people who are getting medication abortion in the mail, who are in states where it is illegal or going back to a state where it's illegal. This makes it that much harder on those people who need access to good quality health care.
I want to end with Michelle Goodwin. You now have a situation, even without this ruling, where abortion is illegal basically in something like, well, more than a dozen states and 13 states following the decision to overturn Roe v. Wade last year. Georgia also bans abortion at about 6 weeks of pregnancy before many know that they're pregnant. Florida now the same. We are talking about situations where even in the case of rape and incest, if you can talk about what this means for people across this country and take it back to Kaczmarek's decision, a well-known anti-abortion activist before he became a federal judge under Trump in Texas. And now turns out that he erased his name from a journal piece he had written against abortion when he was being considered by the Senate. And the language he used in his decision both talked about unborn humans, and this is being repeated in further decisions, and referred to the Comstock Act. If you can summarize for us where this country is headed in a legal direction, and then when this is considered in referenda across the country, when people at the grassroots have a choice to decide the direction they go in.
Well, it's a dangerous decision. There's so much that we could talk about with this, in that if you think about Roe v. Wade, a 7-2 opinion, five of those seven justices were Republican-appointed. Justice Blackmun, who wrote the opinion in Roe, was put on the court by Richard Nixon. Prescott Bush, the father of George H.W. Bush, was the treasurer of Planned Parenthood. This gives you some sense of just the wide gap and distance between where we began and where we are now. In Roe v. Wade, to your point with regard to language, in Roe v. Wade, the court said that there is a potential life during a pregnancy. And that's right, because not all pregnancies will end in birth. About 15% to 20% will end in miscarriage or stillbirth. And the language now that we see coming out of the Kaczmarek ruling, using that language of unborn human child, and then writing in footnotes the preference for using this, that this is the accurate terminology to be used in such cases, really stretches medicine and science because it's just simply not accurate to consistently what had been in American law, and also gives the perception that all pregnancies necessarily end in birth, which they simply do not. That also has ramifications then when we think about civil punishments and criminal punishments as well. We right now have in South Carolina lawmakers that are pushing forward a bill that would call for the death penalty against women who have abortions and people with the capacity for pregnancy who have abortions. There is this false sense that all pregnancies will necessarily end in a birth, and if that is interrupted in any way, then the state can criminally punish and also impose civil fines. But when you mention that there are more than a dozen states that are now in this position, if we took a map and we looked at the map of the Confederacy, of American slavery, of Jim Crow, you would find that it fits quite well over the map that is now anti-abortion. And there's something to be said about those states that were never beacons of freedom for women or people of color or Black people particularly. And they are not beacons of hope of freedom now for Black women and for people with the capacity for pregnancy in those states. And we've paid far too little attention in drawing that line. And if we draw that line from history into the present, then there are certain things that we do know. And that is, save for federal interventions, either through the Supreme Court, Congress or executive order. These are places that have never tried to be accountable and to create remedy for the past horrors that were inflicted during slavery and during Jim Crow. To bring it all back to Dobbs, that decision that shows great solicitude to the state of Mississippi. The state of Mississippi claimed that it needed this abortion ban in order to protect the health and safety of women. Nothing could be really further than the truth. But if we think about this, it wasn't until 2013 that the state of Mississippi ratified the 13th Amendment, Amy. The 13th Amendment was that amendment which abolished slavery and involuntary servitude, one that was ratified in 1865, but it took until 2013 for Mississippi to get there. And Mississippi is still working, and many of these other states, on that long arc to freedom. They're not quite there, and certainly the backdrop of where they are with regard to abortion bans shows how far away they are from recognizing the human dignity and the personhood of people with the capacity for pregnancy in their states.
Well, Michelle Goodwin, we want to thank you for being with us. Of course, we'll continue to cover this issue. The stay has been put in place until Friday, until tomorrow. Michelle Goodwin is visiting professor of law at Harvard Law School, author of Policing the Womb, Invisible Women and the Criminalization of Motherhood. And thank you to Julie Burkhart in Wichita, Kansas, president of Wellspring Health Access, co-owner of Hope Clinic. She worked with Dr. George Tiller for years. Coming up, Fox News has agreed to pay an historic settlement, $787.5 million, $750 million, to Dominion Voting Systems for spreading lies. Stay with us. Renaissance by Dinner Party. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to look at the historic settlement reached this week to end Dominion Voting Systems' lawsuit against Fox News for promoting lies about voting machines being rigged against Trump in the 2020 election. On Tuesday, shortly after a jury was picked for the trial, Fox News agreed to pay Dominion $750 million. That's $787.5 million to settle the lawsuit. As part of the deal, Fox was not required to apologize for airing lies about Dominion. It's believed to be the largest media defamation settlement in history. But Fox's legal battle is still not over. Fox still faces a $2.7 billion defamation suit from another election technology company, Smartmatic. In the months after the 2020 elections, Fox repeatedly claimed Dominion and Smartmatic were part of a vast conspiracy to rig the election. Fox repeatedly aired conspiracy theories, even though some of the network's most prominent hosts, including Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham, as well as Fox Corporation chair Rupert Murdoch, were privately admitting they knew Trump's election fraud claims were false. In one private exchange on November 19th, Tucker Carlson wrote to Laura Ingraham about one of Trump's lawyers. Carlson wrote, "Sidney Powell is lying, by the way. I caught her. It's insane," he said. Ingraham then replied, "Sidney is a complete nut. No one will work with her. Ditto with Rudy." Carlson replied, "It's unbelievably offensive to me. Our viewers are good people, and they believe it," he said. Rupert Murdoch privately described the election conspiracy theories as, quote, really crazy stuff and damaging, he said. Despite this, Fox continued to amplify lies about the election. This is a November 2020 clip of Trump attorney Sidney Powell being interviewed by Maria Bartiromo about Dominion.
I've never seen voting machines stop in the middle of an election, stop down and assess the situation. I also see reports that Nancy Pelosi's longtime chief of staff is a key executive at that company. Richard Blum, Senator Feinstein's husband, significant shareholder of the company. What can you tell us about the interest on the other side of this Dominion software?
Well, obviously, they have invested in it for their own reasons and are using it to commit this fraud to steal votes. I think they've even stolen them from other Democrats in their own party who should be outraged about this also.
After Tuesday's settlement was reached, Justin Nelson, an attorney for Dominion, spoke outside the courthouse.
The truth matters. Lies have consequences. Over 2 years ago, a torrent of lies swept Dominion and election officials across America into an alternative universe of conspiracy theories, causing grievous harm to Dominion and the country. Today's settlement of $787,500,000 represents vindication and accountability. Lies have consequences.
Since the settlement was reached, Fox has barely covered the news on its broadcaster website. On Tuesday night, the lead story on the Fox News website was headlined, Elon Musk reveals to Tucker Carlson whether he's seen evidence of alien life. We're joined now by Angelo Carusone. He is president of Media Matters. Media Matters recently sent a Federal Elections Commission complaint against Fox News based on evidence from the Dominion lawsuit. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Angelo. It's great to have you with us. First, respond to this unprecedented settlement.
I mean, it's obviously a significant number. I mean, it is, and like I said, it's unprecedented. But I also would note that Fox's scale of deception here was industrial scale. So, you know, in a way, it's proportional to the scope and scale of what Fox News did in terms of their defamation. They didn't just make one comment, as you noted. I mean, this was a two-month pattern where they were repeatedly reinforcing the idea that the election was stolen. And how it's so tied into Dominion is that the foundation of that big lie was that these voting systems, these machines, were somehow manipulating the votes, manipulating the counts, or flipping the counts from Trump to Joe Biden. So without this specific defamation, without the claims they were making and falsehoods about Dominion and also Smartmatic, you would not be able to then construct that big lie narrative on top of it that the election was stolen. So it's really significant how the lies about Dominion tie into the larger story that the right wing tells their audience about the election being stolen. So it's a big deal. It's probably not going to change Fox, though. There's going to need to be a lot more consequences in order for that to happen.
Well, let's talk about the fact that part of the settlement was not an apology. Dominion did not force an apology from Fox. I want to go to a conversation that Dominion CEO John Poulos had with CNN's Jake Tapper on Wednesday.
Why not force them to tell all those people, all those misled Americans, which polls indicate millions of them still believe this nonsense, why not force them to say, we shouldn't have done that, that was false, you have been misled, Joe Biden actually won, Dominion and Smartmatic and all that stuff was operating fine. Why not force them to do that? Was it just like, we'll give you $200 million more if you don't force us to do it? Because you could have forced them to do it.
The defamation part of the law is really not built around apologies. It is built to compensate for damage. And I can tell you, we had a company-wide call yesterday, and the unanimous consent in our company is if we could trade this all in and go back in time and have our company reputation back, we would do so
exactly
every single time.
Exactly.
So that's John Poulos, the CEO of Dominion, who also argued that just the size of the settlement said to the world what Fox had done wrong. But Jake Tapper's comment that those in a silo who are just watching Fox may not know.
Yeah. I mean, Fox isn't going to tell them about the size of the settlement. They'll just tell them that a settlement was reached, which is what they've been doing. They're not actually giving them a sense of this is a really, really big number. And the other thing is that, you know, it's one thing not to get an apology, but an acknowledgement that what you said wasn't true is really important, because Rupert Murdoch actually said it himself during the discovery, during the deposition. He said Fox News was the only entity in the country that could correct the election lies that Trump was telling his people, that his people believed. That is something that Rupert Murdoch acknowledged, that only Fox News has that influence and power over a very, very large part of this audience. So if they really want their reputation back or to sort of undo it or even just undo some of that damage, the only way for that to happen is actually for Fox News to tell their audience that they misinformed them and that they did it knowingly. Obviously, that will never happen. And that's in part why the settlement was so high, because for Fox News, they were willing to pay, you know, more money just to avoid the possibility that their audience would find out that the network was knowingly misinforming them. And worse for Fox, that they didn't actually believe that the election was stolen. That's the very thing that started all of this in the first place. Their audience would turn against them for that. That's why they started to tell these tall tales, because they were afraid that their audience was mad at them.
And to say the least, this was an 11th-hour settlement. The jury was already impaneled. So much had come out during discovery. MSNBC recently aired audio recorded by former Fox News producer Abby Grossberg of a Trump campaign official privately admitting to a Fox News producer that the campaign lacks evidence of election fraud.
Are any of the machines, I know it was on War Room the other day with Steve Bannon, have any of the machines been looked at? He had said that one was looked at in Georgia.
I'd have to check on that in terms of Georgia. I know during the audit they did check on those machines. They're really, you know, if we can just go off the record for one sec here.
Yeah, of course. I don't want us to say it if it's not. That's why we're checking.
I think they have looked at the machines. When the Secretary of State did its audit, there was a lot of, I think, a fair bit of looking at the machines. You know, the audit came in pretty darn close to what the machine count was with the receipts. So, you know, I don't know the outcome of those, but our understanding, again, this is from the Secretary of State's office, was that there weren't any physical issues with machines on those inspections.
So talk about the significance of this, Angelo Carasone. We're hearing a Trump official responding to a Fox producer.
I mean, I think the one thing that this just reinforces is what we've been, you know, one of the things we've been pointing out repeatedly, which is that Fox knew, and that they all kind of knew. They all knew that what they were saying wasn't true. You know, if they really believed these things, it would be preposterous. It would be baseless. It would change the orientation. You know, it's obviously spreading misinformation is bad. Believing it and spreading it is a little bit different, because you're not necessarily a bad actor and there's still a potential for you to be changed, or at least your intentions aren't a lie. In this case, it's so much worse, because what it shows and what that audio specifically demonstrates is that it wasn't just Fox that was sort of didn't, you know, had some skepticism but was still promoting it, because as they were saying, as Fox has been saying publicly, well, they were just reporting on something that other people were saying. That has been Fox's defense, and that's going to be Fox's defense in Smartmatic. They've already indicated that that's what they're going to push in their defense there, is that, well, we were just doing neutral reporting. We were letting them do it. What that audio reveals is that that's not neutral reporting, that they were actually in cahoots, that the Trump people also didn't believe the things that they were saying, but were saying it because it was a way to attack and undermine the legitimacy of the election and try to keep themselves in power. and that they needed places like Fox News to take those deceptions, to launder them and add some validity to it. And so to me, that's the significance of that audio, is that it actually shows the other side of this, and it totally obliterates the little bit of defense that they still have for subsequent litigation. And it will hurt them not only with Smartmatic, but will also hurt them a lot with these shareholder derivative lawsuits that are currently unfolding, because this goes to show the level of intentionality of deception on the part of Fox News and how they breached their fiduciary responsibilities.
Angelo, The Lever is reporting that Fox's massive settlement with Dominion Voting Systems could also mean a tax break as large as $213 million for Fox, almost a third of what they're paying out.
I know, what a world. I think the thing to me, and that's partly why I said earlier, that's not to dismiss the significance of this. This is a really big settlement. But one of the things that Fox did pretty promptly to make sure that everybody knew it was going to be okay for them, specifically their investors and their shareholders and the markets, is to